we return to the hotline right now to bring in our next guest, Tim Street with the OHSAA. Tim, thank you very much for the time, my friend. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Andy, Matt, thanks for having me on. Hope things are well in Elyria today.
So far, so good, but it's still relatively early, and we're supposed to get some of the rain you guys are expected to get a little bit of, and that comes, of course, on top of all this snow as well, so we might be floating out of here tomorrow.
We might be down here, too. I think we're supposed to get some of that, too, but the storm over the weekend didn't hit us as bad as I think it got you guys up on the lake, though, so we're fortunate for that. But, yeah, some an inch or so of rain on top of all the snow is going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, no question about that. Well, speaking of interesting, and this got quite the reaction over the last couple of weeks here, I want to begin with the letter penned by Jerry Snodgrass and Carissa Niehoff as well, telling parents to kind of cool it just a bit. And I think that's something that for anyone who's been to a high school game, and I wouldn't say it's isolated to just high school, has certainly thought, if not said, at some point. So my question is, was there a specific instance that kind of caused this, or is it kind of a series of events that led to this?
Yeah, good question. It was not a single incident that led to the letter, and actually the letter was initiated by Carissa at the National Federation. And for those listening that might not know, Ohio and actually every state is a member of the National Federation of State High School Associations, and that's the national governing body for high school sports in our country. And that's the organization that writes most of the playing rules that our high schools play by. So it is the NCAA equivalent, if you will, of high school sports. And Carissa does a great job. She's new in that position, but I think she had been made aware of quite a few states, Ohio being one of them, that is having a bit of a crisis with some of our officials in terms of numbers of officiating. And it was kind of the culmination of lots of different reasons, but one of the main reasons is so many of our young and new officials only do it for a year or two, and then they get burned out. They are constantly berated and disrespected by folks in the stands, and so they just quit doing it. And if you have that year after year, the veteran officials retire, and then you get a shortage, and that's what we're faced with right now in Ohio. So, Carissa, we've got to give her props for putting that letter together. She sent it out to all 50 state executive directors. Jerry made some edits and kind of framed it a little bit more for Ohio, and then we sent it out. So it's gotten a lot of great feedback. We're pretty happy with the response so far.
And I want to detail a little bit of what you mentioned there also and give you an opportunity here to shed some light on the declining number of officials and the steps that are kind of being taken to fix that, because you mentioned it. A lot of the veteran officials, you know, it takes a little bit to certainly get under their skin. Not that we haven't seen that before, but you're right. It seems like the issue is it's the officials under the age of 30. You know, these are the men and women that you want to stick around here. You want them to continue to do this. You want them to continue to grow and continue to get better. But as a result of the berating that we've witnessed, that kind of discourages them from continuing to come back. And I want to kind of give you an opportunity here to shed some light on the declining number of officials and what might be done, what might be being done in order to fix that.
Sure, and you make a good point that it is the younger officials that are often the ones that we're losing. And the thing that I always try to remind people is that if you go to, let's say, a junior high basketball game, my nephew plays seventh grade basketball. I try to catch some of his games, those kinds of games, even the freshman and the JV high school games. You know, the officials working a lot of those games are newer officials, and they're just learning the sport, too. And how to officiate, and the problem is that a lot of those games are obviously the games that they get right out of the gate to work, and if they're still learning how to officiate too, and all they're getting is yelled at by fans and parents, that's going to discourage them from wanting to continue to officiate and improve, and then move up to be those varsity officials. And, you know, I think if officials stick with it and they improve and they want to do the best they can with it, they eventually move up and become varsity officials. And those are the really good officials. We have a lot of those, and we're happy with those. But the younger officials and the ones that are just starting out, junior high games, freshman JV games, those are the ones that often get some of that treatment, and then they don't want to continue. So then it's kind of a snowball effect. But yet you're right, though, that the number of officials that are retiring now, are the average age of an official in Ohio right now is 50, and that average is getting higher. And as those folks officiate and then retire, we're just not having the numbers to keep the pool as big as it needs to be to work all the different games. And this past fall in particular, we had a lot of games across the state at the lower levels, junior high, JV. A lot of those games got canceled in some of our sports, mainly soccer and volleyball, because they couldn't find an official. And that's really sad, because those younger age groups are the ones that are still learning to play. They need competition. You know, that's why they're practicing all week. So we really need to increase the numbers of our younger officials and the overall pool of folks that can work games and get licensed, because we got to do what we can to make sure that there's events for these younger kids to play.
And along those same lines as well, you mentioned that the feedback has been primarily positive to this letter that was penned. And, you know, we see it a lot, especially on the social media platforms. A lot of people are getting behind this. I guess I have to ask, because I haven't seen any negative feedback from our perspective. You guys tend to get the backlash before anybody else does. Has there been any backlash to the letter whatsoever? Have you heard anybody come from the other end of the spectrum and say that they weren't necessarily on board with what was being written?
Luckily, no. No, we have not seen any negative criticism of the letter in that respect. We had a couple, and I think it really only is two, emailers that did say they wanted the officials in their area, and they can even identify a particular official or two, that they wanted to do a better job and increase the number of opportunities they have to get better. And so that was the only, I don't even think that was a negative criticism. It was just, hey, you know, we understand the point of the letter, but we're hoping that this official or that official gets better. And so that's fair. But no, I don't think we've had any negative feedback or criticism, and it's all been very positive. And, you know, for a long time, I think that coaches maybe didn't even realize that we were going to have a shortage of officials, but now they do. And in fact, I'll give an example. The coach of my nephew's basketball team, he is also an official. And when he's not coaching his own team, oftentimes he's officiating basketball games himself. And so I love to watch his games, because he works with the officials. He never yells at them. He doesn't berate them. If he has a question, he'll want to talk to them, but it's never an incident where he'll try to be very irate or angry with them or try to show them up. It's a collaboration effort. You know, he wants them to get better and them to do a good job, and he wants his team to play well too. So I think we're seeing more of that kind of trend rather than coaches belittling officials.
Which is interesting, because you're right. I think if you're a coach and you kind of expose yourself to that, I think that certainly makes you a little less likely to be critical and scream and yell in the face of an official, and at least that solves part of the problem. You know, the coaches aren't really that the biggest part of the issue here. It seems like it's a lot of those who are in the stands observing and letting their voices be heard. And I think it's fascinating, too, because I think that could even do someone in the stands a little bit of good, too, to kind of see what an official goes through, to see how quick that action is and how tough that job really is as well. I think that's certainly something that, you know, if these fans who are attending these games have the opportunity to do, it might do them some good.
Yeah, I think so. And that kind of goes back to our point where school sports are an extension of the classroom. You know, kids, obviously, it's competition. Obviously, they want to win. But the majority of kids play sports to have fun and to do things with their classmates and their teammates. You know, it's meant to be fun. It's not college sports, it's not professional sports where winning is the most important thing. It's meant to be a safe and a healthy and a fun activity for the kids who are out on the court. We think that the vast majority of kids get that. They want to have fun. They're out there not to chase an NBA or a professional contract. They're out there to have fun. They're with their teammates. Those are the memories they're going to have forever. And you know, the thing we try to stress too is that the 97% of our athletes in high school don't play after high school. You know, this is it for 97% of them, and they want to have fun. And, you know, a lot of them win a lot along the way, and that's great too. But this is an educational opportunity. A lot of our coaches are teachers during the day. And, you know, sometimes for a parent or a fan, it might not even be a parent, could just be a regular fan, to go in and disrupt that kind of event with a lot of yelling and anger, that really takes away from the whole event. And a lot of times it embarrasses the team and the school. So I think this letter really called that out too, like, hey, don't embarrass the team, don't embarrass the school, go to the event, thank you for supporting it, have fun, but it's also an educational opportunity as well.
Tim, is there any one sport in particular that's being hit kind of the hardest by the official shortage, or is it all the way around the board?
I think soccer is the number one. I know that I've heard of more games getting canceled in soccer than any other sport. So I would say soccer number one. Close behind it, though, in some parts of the state is volleyball. We need more volleyball officials. And right now, with lacrosse being a newer sport, we need a lot of lacrosse officials, too. So I would say those three. We have a lot of people that begin as basketball officials. Obviously, basketball is a popular sport. Our numbers of people continuing on up to the Class 1 level, that's where the percentage is pretty small. That's kind of what the letter, it hits right now at basketball season. So I think that's part of what you see with the most visible kind of anger. And, you know, you're in a gym, you can hear what people are saying. A lot of times at a football game or a lacrosse game, people are going to yell from the stands, but the officials can't hear it. You know, they're out in the middle of the field. But in basketball, you can hear just about everything.
Yeah, your voice travels in a gym, there's no doubt about that. I mean, when you take the top off of the arena, you know, as you mentioned, the sound kind of has a tendency to kind of dissipate and go away. If you're an official, you're far enough away from that. But, boy, when you're in a gym, especially some of the gyms in our area, you're right on top of the action as a fan. And when you've got a ceiling to encompass all of those sounds, it's awfully tough to ignore that. No question about that. Tim Street with the OHSAA joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We got to talking about some basketball there for a moment. I want to revisit that for just a second. Matt Douglas and I were talking about this in the opening segment of today's show, about how, you know, last year, and I can't speak for Matt, I'll let him jump in if he wants here, but I kind of felt like last year there were some games where I felt like both of the boys and girls level, I thought, man, there needs to be a shot clock because these teams are hanging onto the ball way too long. They're not doing much with the ball. This year it seems like some of that has gone away. Have there been discussions recently where that's popped up about maybe instituting a shot clock at the high school level?
Well, I'm glad to hear that you haven't had those situations quite as much this year as in the past. And I don't know if we can take credit for that or if that's just a function of the teams and how they're being coached to play this year. We get asked about the shot clock a lot. It's a great question. We get asked a lot. And it's kind of interesting that the answer actually goes back to what we started talking about at the beginning, and that's with the National Federation. So in Ohio, and every state plays by National Federation rules, and the national rules for high school basketball say that there's no shot clock. Now, people are going to say, wait a minute, what about Minnesota, or what about Florida? There are 8 states in our country that break national rules and play with a shot clock. And so a lot of people say, well, why doesn't Ohio do that? Well, it's always been the directive from our leadership, both from our executive director, but also our board of directors, is that we're not going to deviate from national rules. For those 8 states that do deviate from national rules, they give up quite a few things. They give up their seat on the National Rules Committee. They give up their vote on several things that all 50 states get to vote on. There's also some other things, including some publications, some other basketball-specific items that we get as a state, that we would give all that up if we broke away from national rules. So it's a great conversation. I don't fault people from asking and from even wanting it. I've been to some games where even I thought, boy, a shot clock would make this game a lot different. But national rules at the high school level say no shot clock, and in Ohio, we play by national rules.
All right. Well, simply stated, it makes plenty of sense, and I think it seems like there's a lot that you would give up if you decided to go the direction of one of those eight states that don't follow the rules of the National Federation, correct?
Yeah, you would give up a lot. And, you know, the other thing, too, and I it's kind of, this is one of those questions that would always be fascinating to ask a coach and then ask the school's athletic director, because I bet there are some coaches, I don't even know if it's the majority, but I bet some coaches would say, yes, we would like a shot clock. I bet the majority of athletic directors would say no, because it would then be up to them to find someone else to work at the scorer's table to run the shot clock. And I always give this analogy, and we might have even talked about this before, but one of our staff members here, Bo Rugg, he's our director of officiating. For 30 years, he has run the shot clock for Ohio State men's basketball games. If you might not know his name, but if you've seen an Ohio State game, you've seen him sitting at the scorer's table running the shot clock. And Bo would be the first to tell you that there are more game stoppages and reviews and even questions or misappropriation of the rules at various levels of college basketball with the shot clock than with any other part of the game. And that's at the college level. We'll extrapolate that down to the high school level. I mean, we honestly might have games that might take for 3 hours if we had a shot clock, just trying to get the rules right on did the ball hit the rim, did it not? What are the situations where you reset the shot clock? I mean, I know at some of the games I go to, they're pulling someone out of the stands to run the game clock before the game. I don't know if you're going to have much luck trying to get people to want to run the shot clock either. So it's not just the idea of it. I understand the idea of wanting a shot clock. There's nothing wrong with that. A lot of times, though, at the high school level, it is the operation side of making sure that all the rules are followed properly and you have someone to do it too.
Is this a topic that is brought up at the national? I'm just curious if eight different states are kind of throwing it in there. Is it a topic that's brought up at the national level? Is it kind of the tradition that keeps it out of the game?
Well, I think it's not only the tradition. I do think that's part of it, but I also think it's the expense. Sure. It's the manpower to have someone run the shot clock at all the different games. Let's not complicate the game. Let's try to keep it simpler, and the shot clock does complicate the game. So, you know, I think it's all those things put together. When you look at a shot clock system from an electronic standpoint, it's about $3,500. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some schools, that's not a lot of money, but for some schools, that is a lot of money. So you have to look at the expense side of it, too, and then some schools pay the people that work at the scorer's table. Some schools don't. It's all a part of the game. And you might remember a couple years ago, we made the change that the clock operator and the official book at high school games, we asked them to wear an official's shirt now, and the same thing would be applied to the 30-second clock or the shot clock operator as well, because that they would then be an official part of the game.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And to your point, you know, talking about how this it could extrapolate down to the high school level from the college level, my previous employer, Notre Dame College, that was one of the places where we always struggled to find somebody working that shot clock. And it seemed like something so simple in nature. You push a button, you reset it, you push a button, you reset it. But as you mentioned, there are instances, too, where you have to decide, okay, how much time do we put back on the shot clock? Was the shot clock running? There are so many things that could slow a game down, and you've got to find somebody who is interested. You've got to find somebody who's attentive. You can't just pull any average Joe off the street to run that shot clock, because they have to constantly be paying attention also. So it's interesting you bring all that up, because there are a lot of layers to handling that position.
Yeah, a lot of layers. And I, like I said, I don't fault anyone for wanting a shot clock at high school basketball level. It's a good conversation. I mean, it's an interesting one, too. You know, how would this change the game? But when you look at all the different logistics of doing that and the expense, and you know, you're right, too, that a lot of people don't realize how many times at the college level and the pro level, but how many times a different number is put on the shot clock, whether it's a timeout taken, whether it's reset the shot clock to 8 seconds, you know, and that can happen, and then it gets switched back to the regular time for the next possession. That can get complicated, and, you know, it's complicated at the high school, at the college and pro level. It would be even more so at the high school level where you don't have quite the experienced people running it. So it's a fair question. It's an interesting question, but I really don't think it ever is going to come to Ohio high school basketball.
Good stuff. Tim, this was awesome. A lot of fun to have you on with us, as always. We look forward to doing it again soon.
Hey, sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
Thank you, Tim. You do the same. Again, Tim Strebe with the OHSAA joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.